Well, hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and I want to extend a warm welcome to all of you who are members at the Tenpenny Files. You can find the premium area hosted on Podbean by going to drtenpenny.com and hover over the tab at the top that says podcast. During our deep dives, I want to have a conversation with our guests about what inspires them and find out about who they really are. We kind of know who people are on their public platforms, but this is going behind the scenes, behind the curtains, and hearing a little bit more about how they got to where they are. So let me introduce to you today our guest, Sean Jason. In a world where everything is truly upside down and backwards, discovering the truth can be a daunting task. Fortunately, a Canadian man named Sean Jason has stepped up to face that task. Sean created a free independent newspaper called Druthers to help fellow Canadians join him in this quest to find the truth. And if you listened to our free podcast yesterday, you know that we're going to expand this newspaper all around the world starting now. Sean is a Canadian with a vision. In his frustration over the lies being pushed forward by the government and the mainstream media, Sean set out to explore the truth and invite a team to take on this daunting task with him. According to Sean, quote, Druthers is intended to help people question things more deeply. We do not aim to be an authoritative voice of truth. Rather, we are explorers of truth and we invite people to join us. One thing is certain. What we are told by our elected officials and the legacy media outlets is absolutely devoid of truth. We must discover for ourselves what is really going on. Druthers, founded druthers.net, was born in December 2020 with its first 25,000 copies. Often called the people's paper, Druthers has grown at an astonishing fast rate. And in April, the edition was over 500,000 copies, and I believe the number is more than a million so far that have gone into print. The project is entirely funded by donations and run by volunteers. There's no government money, no big sponsors, and not even any advertisers. This is truly a paper of the people, for the people, and by the people. So, Sean, welcome this morning to Deep Dive with Dr. T. What an incredible legacy that you've started already and things that are going all around the world. So how did you get into this? What made you decide that the newspaper route was the way to go?
Because mainstream media sucks. It's kind of the tagline for this project so far. And that's literally a major ingredient of why we started this, why I decided to do this, because mainstream is lying. That's clear to almost everybody. I don't think a lot of people recognize the depth of the lies, but everybody knows the mainstream media is full of it. And with big tech censoring, admittedly censoring, anybody who speaks out against the official narrative, they're censored, deleted, shadow banned. It's crazy. How do you get information out? So we decided to go with a newspaper because you can't really, once it's printed, you cannot delete it. It cannot be censored. You have to burn it. So it's a way to get information to the people.
Did you happen to see the interview that just came out yesterday or the day before with Project Veritas about Facebook? That there were two whistleblowers that came forward from Facebook and literally showed the algorithms that they were using to suppress information, particularly in the anti-vax space. And they call it vaccine hesitancy, and they actually even give it a VH score for all the things that they've posted, whether they personal experiences, like I got the shot and I had these side effects, they now are considering those to be propaganda, and they're calling them vaccine hesitancy, and they're giving websites on Facebook and on Instagram scores and deleting and shutting down their reach and shutting down even people telling their personal experiences, which if you go back to kind of the beginning of Facebook, that's what Facebook started out to be, is me just sharing, hey, you know, it's sunny here in Cleveland, Ohio today. How is it over there in Toronto? You know, and just like sharing experiences. So now they've got documented proof of all of these things, and they're wanting to shut down every contrarian voice. So like you said, once they do things in print, they can't really shut it down. Did you get a chance to see that interview, by the way, any chance?
I didn't, no. I'm not surprised by it, but no, I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah. After we're done with this chat here, I'll send you the link, because it's a 20-minute interview that, given the business that you're in, you will probably rip it apart and have some great material for future articles that come out of that video. It's very quite good.
There's so much material out there too. I mean, it's crazy how much is going on.
Seriously. So you're in Toronto now, right?
Correct. Yes.
Were you born and raised in Toronto? Did you start from there?
I was born in a little town called Tillsonburg, about an hour and a half from here.
And tell us about that experience. I grew up in a tiny little town too. So what was that like growing up? And tell us about your journey.
Ooh. Oh boy, it's been an adventurous one. Where to begin? Basically, Tillsonburg was boring for a child that had a curious, explorative mind. So quite honestly, I didn't really enjoy Tillsonburg growing up as a youngster, because I was bored and got into a lot of trouble. I was a little troublemaker kid.
Imagine
I don't know how far we're going to go with that one, but yeah.
So did you graduated from high school there, I'm assuming. Did you go on to college?
No, I dropped out of high school. I spent 4 years in high school. I was in grade 12, and I don't know how it is there, but up here, after grade 12, you're supposed to have about 32 credits. After 4 years in high school, I had 9.5 credits. So to graduate at that rate, I had another 12 years or something crazy of school ahead of me. I'm like, you know what? I'm done with this. I'm going to go get a job and make some money.
And what did you do from there?
My first job out of high school was I was working in a warehouse at Leon's Furniture. I don't know if you have Leon's down there, big furniture store, but yeah, I worked in a warehouse for a little while. But that was the beginning of recognizing that jobs suck also, most of them. I worked for literally 60 different companies before I gave up and said, you know what, I'm going to do my own thing. And I started getting into small business myself. Because, I didn't enjoy most jobs. Most jobs are not congruent. I'm not congruent with most jobs. We just don't mesh.
Well, free spirits have challenging times with 9-to-5s. That's for sure, you know.
Yes.
So
yes.
You mentioned that you woke up 16 years ago and became an activist. What was that pivotal point that made you decide that? What happened 16 years ago?
Well, first, a little setting of the scenario 16 years ago. I had a bunch of small businesses. A commercial building that had two apartments upstairs, and a bunch of us worked, lived, and played together in ways that were fun, productive, and sustained us. And it was growing, and we all really loved our jobs. It certainly wasn't the typical jobs. And then somebody, an old friend of mine, came along and handed me a VHS tape about 9/11. And this was 2005, and I didn't believe the mainstream story. It didn't seem right, but I was a workaholic. I was busy with business. I didn't spend much time digging in. It just didn't feel right, the whole 9/11. But then somebody handed me this VHS about 9/11, and in that hour and a half, everything in me changed. Ever since little, my goal was to get rich. You know, if they asked little Sean, what do you want to be when you grow up? I didn't say doctor, lawyer, or any of that. I'm like, no, rich. That's what I want to be when I grow up. But all that got put on the back burner after somebody handed me that tape, and I watched it, and I realized, oh my goodness, I knew something was wrong with this picture. And I grew so hungry to learn that my desire to become rich just took a back seat. It didn't matter. I needed to learn. So within 1 month of watching that tape, I fired everybody. This was family and friends too. This wasn't just, you know, my family and friends. I let everybody go, vacated the commercial building that we had, put my stuff in storage, and my girlfriend and I got in the car and just decided to wander for a while. And that turned into about a 1 year homeless. I say homeless, but it was more, you know, staying with friends, hotels, campgrounds, just wandering for a year. And yeah, everything changed. The intent was only to take 6 months off to go learn more about life. But that turned into like a 7-8 year journey before I became productive again. So it turns out that rabbit hole was not just 6 months of a rabbit hole. That's, oh, wow. It took me 8 years to come out the other end and become productive again.
In that wandering, what were some of the most eye-opening discoveries that you came across that really were transformative to you personally?
That's a good question. It was more of the overall recognizing that, yes, things are not right in the world. I mean, I always had a sense of it. I've been a little rebel since young. Didn't like the way things were. Didn't understand why they were, but it didn't feel right. And so I think what I picked up mostly from that learning journey is the overall view that things are not right. Humanity's hugely, terribly misled, and it's not an accident. We're being misled in intentional, horrific ways, really. And here, look at as of 2020, the manifestation of our reality, it's increasingly worse and worse. Those who are managing the world do not care for us. That's probably the biggest realization. I mean, I always had a sense of that, but it wasn't until I dove in that I recognized, wow, things really are not as they seem.
How do you perceive what's happening now in relation to that, revelation that you had?
It's all the same. It's just their game escalating. I mean, what I was able to see and what I see happening now too is nothing new. This has been going on my entire life. It's been going on my parents' entire life. This has been a long time plan, agenda, I guess you could call it, to literally, for the tiny percent at the top to gain more money, power, and control. Ultimately, it's not about money. They already have more than they know what to do with. Money is a path to the power and control that they seek. And as of 2020, they've really gripped, tightened their grip. And this is the end game, so to speak, their end game. And yeah, I can't believe it's here. I mean, you see, a lot of times I had this knowing, but you don't know really until you know, right? Even though I had this knowing and I thought this was how it was. But as of 2020, it's very validating because I recognize that, yes, I've been right about all this stuff, or a lot of it anyways. And their game, they flipped the switch. And as of 2020, this game is off the charts now. It's crazy. And I can't believe how many people are believing the story. It's mind-blowing to me, Sherry. What the heck is with people?
Why do you think that is?
Long-time conditioning is what I see. I mean, like I say, this game's been going on all my life. And for a long time before that, this has been a slow, incremental, step-by-step, dumbing us down, making us not think for ourselves and just trust and follow the experts. Follow the experts. trust the science. No, they've been doing this for a long time, and it's literally a slow degradation of our cognitive abilities, and they try to stop us from actually thinking critically. No, just watch the TV, believe what you're told, and parrot it out into the world.
and goose step along accordingly, right? Yeah. To the beat of their drummer. I mean, that's what I was saying just a few minutes ago about this thing with Project Veritas exposing with the whistleblowers from Facebook. These platforms that have gotten so much leverage over the entire world between Facebook and Instagram and Google and all of their things that they're doing in terms of tracking everything that we do. And now they're talking about this COVID pass that you have to get tested all the time and you have to have this jab that's actually going to kill you. But if I get it, I can go on an airplane. It's like
you can go back to normal if you inject this untested. I don't have to tell you.
But it's true. It's really true. I mean, experimental, never been done to human beings before. No long-term studies, have no idea what the long-term consequences are. I mean, we're 5 months into this now, and we're already starting to see some horrific consequences. We've already got over 4,000 deaths reported here in the U.S. and more than 200,000 adverse events reported. And we know that that's somewhere between 1 and 10% of what's actually happening out there. And the people that are just walking along and just thinking that this is exactly what they need to do, they're just so zombified. How do you think this, your whole issue of developing druthers to get people to wake up, I know your circulation is growing exponentially. There's a difference though between circulation and readership of how many people actually pick up that, they can pick it up and read the headlines. Do you have a sense of how many people are actually reading the articles that are there and then passing that information forward?
I don't really have a sense as far as how many. It would be hard to put a guesstimate on a percentage, but I can tell from the messages that come to the website. I mean, to druthers, we receive between 50 and 100 emails every day. So we are having reach. These are making it in people's mailboxes. And we get a lot of support. There's the few haters. It's maybe 5% of people who receive a paper in their mailbox and message us are angry about it. But 95% of people who receive one in their mailbox and message us are excited and grateful, deeply grateful. They're so happy. It gives them a sense of hope that someone's actually spreading real information. Percentage wise, I don't really know what people, how much it's being read, but they're getting out there and it is making a difference. So.
And what do the haters say to you? Like that you're tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist or something? I mean, what do they generally say?
Pretty much. They don't ever really have anything good to say. Well, I mean, it's not that they don't have anything good to say. They don't have anything of substance. They just call it conspiracy rag. They often use curse words to say, stay away from my property, threats of trespass. I mean, they don't come up with anything of substance. There's no value. It's just, you know, they just hiss at you. They don't really, it's like, come on, you got something to say, say it. No, but you don't. And then when they do say things from, for example, a lot of the normies you see out there, they'll just parrot what they hear on the TV. And then if you say something that counters that, they short circuit. They're like, they don't know what to say after that, because they're not thinking for themselves. They're literally just parroting what they hear on the TV. And anything that, you know, interferes with that line of thinking literally shorts them out, and they don't know what to say, and they'll get angry, start calling you names. It's kind of bizarre.
Yeah, it is. Well, humans are hardwired to not live in the realm of cognitive dissonance. They're hardwired to, when something confronts them that is causing them discomfort and dis-ease in their brain, that cognitive dissonance, we're hardwired to not live in gray area. We need to go to either black or white. Yeah. And most people are so hardwired with this being just another vaccine, and it's safe, effective, protective. And oh my, by the way, my doctor told me to get it. You know, yeah. The doctors that don't know their elbow from their left ankle, you know, about this entire concept. So that's interesting that you say that they just hiss at you, because isn't that true in the mainstream media and from the government? I mean, mm-hmm. they just feed us stuff. And then when we say, hey, can you explain this or give us an explanation, yes. or show us the science you want us to believe? They just mm-hmm. hiss at you back.
Yeah. I mean, vilify people for questioning. It's astounding. It's important to question things. Like, what the heck, people?
It's how we learn, and it's how we grow to have these discussions, to have discussions back and forth. Have you had an opportunity with your newspaper now that can be found at druthers.net? Jason, have you had any actual interface with government officials about your paper?
Nope, none at all. They kind of freak me out. I avoid government officials as much as I can.
I'm just wondering if you had any feedback, or if they were trying to disparage you or anything like that. If you heard anything, or even from some of your readers that send you emails, if they've had any interface with anybody at the government level or even the police level about what you're spreading through druthers.net.
It's kind of an interesting layer that's just started developing in the last couple of weeks. I've now heard two reports from people who received a fine from police for spreading misinformation, for giving out the paper. This is two reports in the last couple of weeks. So this seems to be a new game, a new layer to the game that they're applying. And literally, they said, the one woman made a little video report about what happened. And she said that the police came up, said, I'm going to give you a ticket. She says, for what? He says, for giving out the newspaper. She said, is it illegal to give out a newspaper? And he says, yes, when it's misinformation, and I'm giving you a ticket. And literally gave her a ticket. It didn't have the ticket. What was written had nothing to do with actual spreading misinformation. It was a failure to comply to an order given during a state of emergency. He literally said to her, according to her report to me, he literally said, yes, it's illegal when it's misinformation, and he gave her a ticket. And I've heard this twice now. That's concerning.
What is she going to do with the ticket?
Oh, probably just nothing. What we're all doing up here, we're all getting these $880. I got one too. I'm part of the 880 club, we call it, because they give us these $880 tickets, but they're not going to hold up. Most people aren't even getting court dates. And a lot of them, when they do, they show up and there's no record of them. These tickets are not going anywhere. And I believe that they don't want these tickets fought, because if these tickets are fought and won, it sets the precedent for all the others to fall. So that's why, I mean, I got my ticket back in, I think it was February, and still no court date. Nothing's come of it. They don't want to move forward with this. These tickets, what I see it as, is just a scare tactic. And it works. Some people get scared away and they won't come back to a protest, or, you know, it's shown online and people go, oh no, I don't want a ticket. I better not go to a protest. It's literally just a scare tactic that has no weight and no meaning behind it, as I see it.
How did they come up with that number? $880 for, yeah, for doing what?
Yeah. Well, almost all of these tickets, what's written on them is, as I say, failure to comply to an order given during a state of emergency. So yeah, when I got my ticket, it was for, it was one of the protests where we went down to Queen's Park, and right away there was a strong police presence and they were trying to shoo us off before a gathering started. And so I was filming, I'm media. So I was filming, documenting this, and the officer said, keep moving. So I did. I kept moving. I did not stop once, but I stayed in the area. Apparently that wasn't good enough. So they barked at me and came running over, and like six or eight of them circled me and gave me a ticket for failure to comply to an order made during a state of emergency. So, yeah.
And of course they never cite the order, and they never even tell you what you're failing to comply to or with, correct? No.
Just an order made, failure to comply to an order made. So they told me something, I didn't listen. So now I got to pay them $880.
Do you think anybody's actually paying that money?
Unfortunately, I believe so. Probably a fair percentage of people, because most people are scared of the system. And, you know, getting a ticket is a big thing to a lot of people. I mean, I was a little troublemaker. So, I mean, tickets and police don't really freak me out that much. But for a lot of, you know, regular folks who don't have interactions with the police, getting a ticket is, it's a scary thing to a lot of them. And I think a lot of people are paying it, which is horrible. Please don't pay them. Please don't. You don't have to. Fight it. Say no. Plead not guilty. Fight it in court. And if you even get a court date, it'll likely be thrown out.
Interesting. And so do they make the check out to the local principality, or who do they even pay it to?
That's a really good question. I don't know. I haven't paid mine, so I don't know what they expect.
That's interesting. That's interesting. Maybe that's one of the things that, or maybe druthers.net is already doing this, Sean. Are you already having an 880 club of people that are refusing to pay their ticket?
Yeah. I mean, it's not an official thing anywhere, but it's kind of a joke among a lot of us that, you've joined the 880 club. You know, it's congratulations. Yeah. You get a pat on the back.
It'd be a cool t-shirt, 880 club. It would if you did had a t-shirt like that, it would certainly engage conversation.
Yes.
That people would say, what is the 880 club? You know, and then you could say all the things that you just said. You know, you get this bogus ticket, don't pay it. It doesn't go anywhere. If you fight it, go to court, it'll probably be tossed out, set a quick case precedent. So maybe that might be some fun things to expand.
I like it.
expand on your site. When you go forward with what you're doing in the world, because you started druthers.net, which is where everybody can find it. And so, Sean, what do you want? How do you want people to remember you for all your activist things that you've done?
I don't know. It's not even really how they remember me. I just want people to start thinking more. Because ultimately, this isn't about me. I mean, I started it, but this isn't meant to be about me. Maybe that's why I feel awkward with interviews and stuff, too, because this isn't meant to be the Sean Show. This is about humanity waking up, seeing the bigger picture, questioning things more deeply, and not blindly believing what's being fed to us through the TV and through the radio and the legacy media newspapers. So if people were going to remember me, I hope they remember me as an instigator. I feel that's my core energy. I'm an instigator. I like causing things to happen in the world. And I often refer to myself as an artist, but I don't paint, I don't sculpture. I make things happen in the world. That's my form of art. So if people are going to remember me, call me an artist of life. That would be wonderful.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really beautiful. And I really like the idea of being an instigator, because right now that's what we need more than anything. You know, we need to like have a pot and a metal pan and a wooden spoon and be banging it in front of people's heads to get them to be awake. I wish there was a way to reach more of the strong arms of government, like the people that run around in their flak jackets and their, you know, all of the soldier types that are now calling themselves police. I mean, those people have to get up in the morning and they have to, you know, shower and shave and look themselves in the eye in the morning. And I guess they have deluded themselves into believing that they are doing something that's good for humanity. Do you believe that's true?
I believe there is a percentage of the force, the police officers and such, who do believe that. I hear a lot of chatter, and from multiple sources, from people who should know. So it seems likely to be true. I mean, I can't verify it, but there is a lot of chatter among the police. They're divided, just like the rest of humanity. I mean, everywhere you go, people are divided. It's likely the same, and from what I hear, is the same among the police departments. There's a great divide among them. Many that are refusing to enforce these draconian rules and laws and stupid stuff. And then there's others that are, you know, they're enjoying the power, I guess, and believing the story and thinking they're doing something good for humanity. So it makes it kind of easy when the higher ups in the police, there's a protest coming up. They just take the ones who believe. I mean, they know the psychology of the officers, and they'll take the hardcore ones and send them out to the protest. But I've also heard others, police, when speaking to other police in the city, people have reported to me that when they tell some of these officers what's happening down at the protest, these officers are appalled. They have no idea what's even going on. All of these arrests, and violent too. I mean, the police are getting violent. As of the beginning of this year, they have been very aggressive with us. We've had injuries from police trying to take us down. And then we talk to other police in the city or in neighboring areas, and they have no idea this is happening. So I feel there's a big divide in the police force right now, and hopefully good prevails.
I saw a really short, I can't remember, it's been a while ago now, if it was just an article or if it was a short little video that I saw. And I can't even remember what country this is from. So, I mean, just take for what I'm going to say is, like, I remember seeing this because I thought it was such a good tactic to use with the police force. These women in this country, it seems like it was maybe somewhere in Europe. What they did was they went to these protests and they carried large mirrors with them, like maybe a 2-foot by a 3-foot type of mirror. And they stood in front of the police officers with the mirror and said, look at yourself, look at what you're doing, look at who you've become. These people are your neighbors, your friends. You go to the same church, you go to the same grocery stores, you go to the same restaurants. Look at who you've become. And they've held the mirrors, didn't touch them, but held them right in front and made them kind of have to be forced to look at themselves in their heavy artillery garb and all that stuff. And one by one, many of those police officers put down their baton and put down their gun and came and stood with the people, because it forced them to not look at themselves as a job, but as a human to a human.
Yes.
And I think that some of the bigger protests, because down here in the U.S. we're just lame. I mean, people just don't get together. They don't want to be bothered. I mean, I think that the U.S. is just such a rollover country these days. I mean, we just don't do it. People just don't get together. They don't protest. And then when they do, it's like 8 or 10 people might show up. Unlike the huge rallies that have happened up in Canada. I mean, in Montreal and Toronto and out in British Columbia. I mean, there are huge gatherings. Maybe this is something that you could add, or you could advocate for. It's nonviolent. It's an incredible way to protest and to actually get people, those people who are defending the powers that be, that are defending those that would harm and kill us, to suddenly be forced to look at their own humanity. I think that might be something worth exploring.
Yeah, I like that a lot, actually. That's an interesting way to go. But a note about the rallies being huge here, I don't think they're that huge. I mean, Quebec, they seem to be more on board. They don't protest every weekend. They seem to do one every month or two, and they get 100, 150,000 people out. But here in Toronto, I mean, our biggest one so far was about 20,000 people. We've been protesting now. 14 months we've been protesting. It's over a year now we've been protesting. The biggest we've had is 20,000 people. To me, that's insane. That's nothing. We live in a city of the GTA, Greater Toronto Area, has 7 million people or something like that. So really 20,000 people, it's a nice big crowd and the vibes are great, but that's kind of a pathetic number, really. What the heck? There's 7 million people live in this area that can reach the Queen's Park where we protest. They can reach it with an hour or less. There's 7 million or more people, and we get 20,000 at our biggest. Our average weekend is, a couple of thousand people. It's not huge, unfortunately. Not what I envision as huge anyway, and not what we should have out there. We need more people recognizing what's going on and standing up and speaking up. And the funny thing, I think most people were at a point where the majority are not buying the mainstream story. This is what I'm observing and feeling in the people around. They're not buying the mainstream story. There's a big middle ground. They don't necessarily believe what we're saying on this side, but they're also not buying the story. They're not afraid of the virus. They're just doing what they're told because they don't want to get finger wagged. They don't want to get a fine, whatever it is. I just wish these people would just get up a little more, ask a little more questions, and come join us. Because when enough of us come together, we are unstoppable. Literally, we can cause anything to happen. The people have the power. We just got to get together. And that's a big part of the game that's being played on us, is to divide, smash us apart, because they know that we are powerful together. So they want to keep us from getting together. Hence why churches, you're not allowed to gather, because you might talk and figure things out. Any gathering spot has been closed. They don't want us gathering.
It's exactly right. I mean, if you look back at the history of North America, I mean, that would be mostly in the United States, but also in Canada, all the years that there have been protests that they actually overthrew the government or kicked out, like when in our Revolutionary Wars, I mean, the places where those discussions started were in pubs and in churches.
Yes.
They would go to the church, they'd pray, and then they go to the pub and have a couple brews and like say, yeah, we're fired up. Let's do it.
Let's go get them.
Let's go get them. That's very true. One of the problems with the U.S. in terms of their levels of activism is it's such a big land mass and such a large population. And so we're actually putting together a very large, we're going to call it a spiritual revolution at the end of August. It's going to be outside of St. Louis. It's called Bards Fest, B-A-R-D-S, Bards Fest. We would love to be able to write an article as it gets closer to the time and maybe submit it for circulation, because we want people coming from all over the world because we can't fight these people with just human power. Because they've got us outnumbered, outmoneyed, relationship-wise, in terms they control the message, they control the messengers. And so we feel pretty strongly that we've got to get God back on the playing field, because if we're fighting powers and principalities of darkness and evil things, then we need to fight powers and principalities of good things by putting God back in the middle of the playing field. And we're expecting 150,000 people per day for 4 days to be there. Wow. And it's going to be broadcast and telecast all across the country and around the world. We've already got international contingents that are saying, we want to be there in spirit and we're going to be part of this together. So hopefully that will start something and will wake people up, because I think that a lot of people have been so shut down that they feel like they're in a position of powerlessness. Yes. They feel like, what can I do? It's like one little person, I'm going to show up at a rally, big deal. They're going to keep doing what they're doing anyways. I wish that, and I'm so glad with what you're doing with Druthers.net. Do you have sections in your newspaper not just informational, but are inspirational to get people to step into their power?
Some. I'm not sure if there was one in this month's issue, but pretty much at each issue so far, there's been something that helps, give people that sense of power, to recognize their power, to see the goodness, to feel the hope that there is. I personally have tons of hope. I think this is all exciting, and I wish to help instill that in more people. I think there is a big sense of hopelessness, and they're getting frustrated, and the mainstream is turning that frustration against the dissenters, the anti-maskers, which is such a belittling, ridiculous term. I mean, we're not anti-maskers. Maybe you're anti-face. I mean, we were here first. But yeah, it's...
I read an article last night about the scam and the nonsense of asymptomatic carriers.
Yes.
An asymptomatic carrier is a healthy person. Mm-hmm. And it's the first time ever in the history of humanity that healthy people have to be tested to prove they're not sick. Yeah. I mean, just the oxymoron that goes along with that is just insane. And the whole idea of social distancing, like that virus knows, it goes 6 feet out of your mouth and falls to the floor, right? Mm-hmm. It knows exactly how far to stay apart. And I really hope that people will begin to see the ridiculousness of this and start to join with the people who are standing up against this tyranny, because we're going to lose millions of people to these shots, millions of people. Yeah. And I don't know what that's going to mean for those of us that remain. Are we going to have to go up into northern Canada somewhere and start our own colonies? I don't know what that kind of means.
That may be coming.
Well, as we're winding down here, Sean, Jason, thank you so much for being part of this discussion with us this morning. What words of advice would you like to offer our listeners as we close out on our deep dive here today?
Keep going. I mean, really, personally, I'm excited by all this. Yes, there's a lot of, on an individual level, a lot of people are suffering, and this is horrible for a lot of people. But in the bigger picture of humanity, I really feel we needed this. I mean, our old normal was broken in so many ways. We needed a good swift kick in the butt, and 2020 gave that to us. So now the ultimate question is, are we going to follow the new normal that's being laid out? Because we're not going back to the old normal, and that's good. It was broken in so many ways. We need a new normal. But do we follow the new normal that's being laid out for us? Or do we, the people, actually take hold of this, step up, step into our creative power, and actually build the new world ourselves? I feel it's the latter. We are more and more, and I'm witnessing it happen, coming together and creating the new normal in so many ways. Like even with Druthers, I mean, we're creating the new world media. It's kind of exciting, really, because I've never liked media. I've never bought newspapers, never watched much for news. So it's kind of weird to be making a newspaper and making news, but this is part of the creation process in building the new, because it's not just about fighting and destructing the old. We also need to build the new. So yeah, I say, see the excitement, see the hope, feel the hope. There's a lot of people standing up and stepping up, and I feel it's inevitable. Humanity's got this. So just keep going, keep the hope.
Feel the hope. Do you sell t-shirts on your site?
Yes, there's a few, like Druthers.
You need one that says Feel the Hope, and you need one that says the 880 Club.
Yeah, we might do that. I like that.
Because both of those, I mean, Feel the Hope is so inspirational, because people don't feel the hope. They feel the lockdown. They feel the prison. They feel like everything that's been taken away from them, that they're willing to get this shot to get their life back, which they're not going to do. And so Feel the Hope is great. And the 880 Club, I think, would stimulate a lot of discussion about what that really means. So there, add those to your site, and tell people how that they can get hold of you and how they can donate to support your cause.
Sure thing. Thank you. Yes. Druthers.net is the website. To donate, everything's on the website. You can go to /donate. We receive donations for the newspaper. 100% of donations go into printing and shipping those newspapers across the country. We'd had 24 skids of paper this month that we literally had big rig trucks pick up and take to various provinces and cities across the country. So donations, there's no salaries, no overhead. Nothing is taken from donations. It's entirely used to support the printing and distribution of papers. But people can also, if they wish to have papers mailed to them, they can subscribe at druthers.net/subscribe. That's a way to help support the cost of operations, is through subscriptions. And also we have a magazine coming up, which is kind of exciting. The end of next month, we'll be shipping our first issue of a limited edition, only 5,000 copies made, of a magazine, 128 pages, maybe more. It looks like it's going to be more. We're still filling it up, but it's a high quality collector's edition type of a magazine that will highlight the best of the first 6 months. Because this one I show you here, this is our sixth issue. So this magazine is going to highlight the best articles from the first six issues. It's going to have some bonus features and articles. There'll be a meet the team section in there. So, and that's a way to keep our volunteers fed, because our volunteers, they've been putting in a lot of time. And I mean, we have bills to pay too. We have to find a way to maintain ourselves. So that's what the magazine will do. It's being sold at a premium price, and that's what's going to feed the crew and keep us being able to do what we're doing and put more time into this even. So that's available at druthers.net/magazine. I swear this is going to be massively collectible. We're making history with this paper. And yeah, the magazine is kind of a documentation of that. So everybody should own one of those.
Everybody should own one of those and should highly, highly support this cause. And I'm such a big advocate about people actually paying money to support those who are standing on the front line. I mean, we're fighting powers and principalities that are multi-trillion dollar industries. Yeah. I mean, for everybody to that are listening to this, and as you share this and go forward and talk about it and subscribe to Druthers.net, I mean, seriously, we need to support, and with real dollars, the people that are doing real work, and we shouldn't be embarrassed to ask for it. And everybody should contribute, and every dollar counts, whether it's $5 or $50 or $500 or whatever you can afford. And I know that there's a lot of causes, a lot of organizations out there. And I know that some people make a list of all the different organizations they want to contribute to. They look at the number of dollars they have to distribute, and maybe they do, maybe they've got $300 to distribute. So they take a list of 20 organizations they want to support. And this month they do the first three at $100 each. And the next month they do the next three at $100 each. And so they can share this wealth and support the people that are literally putting their lives on the line, literally, and doing the work, because we've got to get people to support us for those, for all the different work that we do. So I am going to, as soon as we're off the call here, I'm going to go order my magazine so that I can have one of those collector's items, because you're right, we are making history here. So Sean, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Sean Jason, for joining us here this morning, for your candid disclosures, for what we're doing in inspiration and telling people to look at this as a good thing, that we're breaking up old paradigms and we're going to be in the process of starting new. So yes, absolutely. So as we close out today, I want to say a special thank you to our premium members. Your monthly support of us at $20 a month makes us viable and pay all of our employees and all the different things. A lot of people think that just because you have an online business, there's no costs. Well, there's certainly costs when you're actually having an online business and a print edition newspaper that you're shipping out. Those are hard dollar costs. So be sure to support Druthers.net. Get one of those, sign up and be a subscriber, sign up to get the magazine so that this can continue to grow and grow all around the world. It's their labor and you need to support them so that they can continue their work. So for us, you can find all of our educational information. We have lots of different websites, lots of different educational things. Everything is now under the umbrella of drtenpenny.com. You can find it there. You can find our educational courses, our library, all of our social media links. And that's where you can join our newsletter if you haven't done so far. So with that, I really want to close out for today. And every broadcast that I do, every little thing that I do in terms of interviews, I always close with one of my favorite verses from the Bible, which is Romans 12:12. Rejoice in hope, be patient in trouble, and be persistent in prayer. So until we meet again the next time in the next broadcast, stay strong, stay in prayer, and we'll see you next week. Thank you so much, Sean.
And thank you too, Sherry. Love you. Keep going. You're making waves. Keep going.
All right. And for that, we want to say goodbye to everybody. Bye for now.
Bye, Sherry's people.